I approached one of our candidates, and she had been approached by everybody in the world. And finally, she got back to me. She said, okay, what can you do for me? And I went through this litany of all these wonderful volunteers who wanted to do this, 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 and this. And she said, okay, how much are you going to charge me? And I said, oh, no, we're free. She couldn't speak.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. If you want to understand how progressives have been mobilizing since Trump's election, you need to know about the numerous self-organizing groups that direct thousands of volunteers towards useful political action. This episode features an interview with three leaders of one of those groups, Red to Blue. They're Isabel Byron, Michelle Ketem, and Ava Eisenson. They're volunteers who lead volunteers in support of Democrats running for office by providing time, skills, and other resources. I thought we had a great and inspiring conversation about what they do for our country and what they have learned by doing that work. So, after a quick word from our sponsor, please listen to my interview with Isabel, Michelle, and Ava at Red to Blue.
This episode is brought to you by Graphicacy. Graphicacy is an analytic design firm that can help you advance the mission of your organization using your own real data and information. They are 21st century visual communicators who create interactive graphics, motion graphics, and data visualizations. You can find Graphicacy at graphicacy.com. That is GRAPHICACY.com. With Graphicacy's help, you can visualize a better world.
Would each of you introduce yourselves in turn and just give a quick biography? Isabel, Michelle, Ava.
So my name is Isabel Byron, and I am a longtime activist. My first actions were actually against Barry Goldwater. I was a kid, but there I was. And one of those people that got clean for Jean McCarthy. I've been active. I have never been this active.
What do you do for a profession? Or
I have been a consultant for the past 35 years, and I consult mostly with cultural clients on the visitor experience. So museums, for example, would be my clients.
Where do you live? And
I live in Brooklyn.
And do you all?
No, Michelle does, and Ava, I believe, is in Queens.
Yes, okay. I'm in Astoria.
Sounds good.
So I'm Michelle Ketem. I, too, live in Brooklyn. I would describe myself prior to 2016 as the occasional, super occasional, deeply regretful political activist, in that, like, I would, you know, phone bank for a presidential election or do some canvassing every 4 years. And my life was really built around the nonprofit sector and being mission-driven, deeply mission-driven, but with a real erroneous sense that politics was for power-hungry bad people and the nonprofit sector was for mission-driven good people. I have completely reorganized my brain around these matters. So I apologize to society for my prior lack of engagement. And after 2016, that election night, it was apparent to me that our society was heading to this terrible place, you know, where we are now, where we find ourselves in 2020. The only way to engage in it was politically, by trying to win elections everywhere we can, wherever we can, as immediately as we can, while also building power in places that are completely off the map to us right now, that there was absolutely no place that was past the point of no return, and that we needed to start doing the work, you know, with an urgency and an immediacy. I did all of that against the backdrop of running. I run a recruiting and consulting firm. I'm a co-founder with two others. That's been very fortunate for me because I don't have to worry about, you know, my corporate overlords getting mad about how I'm spending my time. And I was also very able to find intersections as we were building Red to Blue between the friends I knew from my job and the friends I wanted to make in the political realm. And so they're different enterprises, but they're also deeply connected.
Makes sense. Ava?
Yes. Hi, my name is Ava Eisensen. My background is very varied, and I come to this from a very different place than my co-organizers. I'm a professional actor. That's my background. But I think that there's this inherent cross-section, if you sort of choose to find it or choose to look for it, between the kind of empathy and sensitivity and like push or desire for storytelling that it's kind of impossible to look around the world and say like, oh yeah, I feel good about this. I feel good about what's going on. Like the same kind of tools I would bring to the table in a different sector are really applicable here. So I've been politically active, but I think after 2016, I really started to understand what it means to be in organization, that showing up and being a lone activist can be helpful, but to really organize with a group of people, the power of that and the cumulative effect of that, I think has become more and more and more and more apparent to me over time. And I've gotten more and more and more active. And I think part of that is, as with, I think, any discipline or any work, once you open the can of worms, you're like, oh, this is a universe of a lot of intersecting things. And it just starts to open up in this completely new way and has been really awakening. And also just a reminder that nobody remembers what they learned in AP history. I've had to relearn a lot of things that I thought I knew or felt like I knew as sort of a concerned citizen, but that is so separate from the like day-to-day nitty-gritty of what it takes to affect any sort of change.
What's sort of the genesis of Red to Blue? How did that come together and what was your role in it?
I would happily talk about that. I was there at the birth. After 2016, a local city councilman and a local rabbi called a meeting. And at that meeting, 2,000 people showed up and different groups formed within a week or two. I knew right away that I wanted to work on electoral politics, as did many other people. And in that big room in December of 2016, many groups formed around electoral politics. We've grown up to be different groups, but at first we were all together. And Red to Blue started on a snowy night at somebody's living room where 37 people showed up because of working on electoral politics. Unlike other groups, we were not, you know, allowed to meet at the synagogue. And we formed a mission that very first meeting. We talked about what we wanted, and we wanted to affect change. And we focused almost immediately on state-level politics, thinking that that's where we could be most effective. I think that Michelle came soon thereafter and started spearheading our work on special elections before the 2017 elections, when we focused on Virginia and helped flip 6 out of 8 seats there.
Is that your version of the story, Michelle?
I was antsy and ready to do some things. And I heard there was this group that I live in a neighborhood called Borum Hill. It's adjacent to Park Slope. I heard there was a group in Park Slope doing good things. And I said, great, who wants to make an introduction? I was still on Facebook back then, and I got passed from one person to another. and I showed up and said, hey, you guys like electoral politics and special elections are now. Mind if I jump in and help there? And that is exactly what happened. And they were great. Like, it was early and it was information. So nobody was protective. In fact, people were like, I don't know. Sure. Yeah. What do you have in mind? And really welcoming. And I think that's the magic of Red to Blue. Do you know the children's story of Stone Soup?
Yes.
So I think of Red to Blue as the Stone Soup of politics. We started with nothing but a bag of rocks, but we said we could make stone soup out of this bag of rocks. And one by one, everybody started showing up with their own special. I'm a vegetarian, so there's no chicken stock in this soup, but you know, the carrots and the potatoes and the vegetables and the chickpeas or whatever goes in the stone soup until we have this amazing thing that's so much bigger than anything it could have been if any of us had just tried to sign up with some pre-existing established group. And that community keeps extending itself. I personally think it starts with Isabel's orientation to the world and that customer experience lens that she's taken to everything. But it's a culture and it's embedded. And so, you know, you should ask Ava. By the time Ava got here, it was clear that Ava's energy was needed. And at that point, we weren't even in formation. We totally existed. And yet with each new person that wants to step up into leadership, there's a way to get that energy and those skills and that worldview and make it better than whatever existed prior to the entry of that person.
I understand that feeling in a startup, how crucial early people are, but people continue to be crucial. Ava, what was your story?
Yeah, I think that's such a great way of thinking about it as a startup, because I think the other piece of it that for me feels so like right and welcoming is that very few people come sort of saying like, this is all I'll do and this is what I'm good at. I mean, as Michelle was saying, people bring their skill sets, but I think there is that startup mentality of like, let's try things, let's figure it out, like let's see what works, which I think if you have maybe more rigid roles that can, or a rigid working environment, that can be a little bit more challenging. But yeah, my experience of joining was really about Isabel like politely stalking me. That is like how it happened. It's true. I was like, you know, in sort of peripherally involved, like I had signed up for this thing and then got on the mailing list for this thing. Like, you know, as you do, and you're sort of looking to where you want to plug in. And I'd gone to a series of phone banking parties and postcarding parties and slowly sort of got to know people who handed me off to other people. And it was really Isabel's doing of her wanting to like connect and just sort of saying like, hey, do you think you might want to do this? And do you think you might want to do this? And I can be, I think, a little bit maybe not extreme, but I think I err on the side of lists and organization and like a plan. And she would sort of be like, yeah, we're kind of working on this thing. And I would be like, well, what do you mean you're kind of working on this thing? Like, is there a deadline? Like, what are we, you know? And I slowly would sort of like, oh yeah, this is kind of like come as you are, bring what you can, do the work you can. And I think as we get closer and closer to the election, our format of structure has changed a little bit just because there's, you know, less time and more things need to get done. Yeah, I think it was really Isabel's core desire for people to feel seen and welcome and attended to. And I think she lights up and you can see her thriving in a community. And so just looking at that light makes it feel like something is working. And that's very addictive to be like, oh, I'm a part of something that's working and we're doing good things. That's sort of what's kept me coming back, and just a sort of general sense of complete terror and total freak out that I like feel better when I'm working.
Ava, to what extent is the motivation for this group Trump, and to what extent is it beyond Trump?
I bet that every member would answer that slightly differently. I would say that the deep understanding and scope of what we're working on is so much bigger than Trump. we all as an organization really recognize that he is the symptom. Like, there is a much, much, much bigger problem at play. And I think when you're working on smaller races and state politics, you can see those aspects incredibly clearly. And so I think Trump is motivating because it's such a specific deadline and, you know, like, hard fact of we want this ended by this date. But I think we're all incredibly cognizant that the work can't end there. And also that just removing him doesn't get to the root really of anything. So yeah, I think both are at play.
Michelle, I mean, when I think about him, he seems like uniquely dangerous to the democracy in just his personality. But I think Ava's right that there's something in our society that's enabling him. And certainly that there's a lot of people in the party supporting him somehow in his party. How do you view that question?
Yeah, it's such a good one, because when Trump's done, I'm not done, and I regret not doing more sooner. So for me, the state legislature question became so deeply important for us because so much power happens at the state level. It's baked into the Constitution. In some ways, like in a good way, in some ways it was designed so that states that didn't want to have to respect human rights didn't have to. But we now have this federated government where so much is happening at the state level. And once we get rid of Trump, Trump was enabled by really weak state governments and was also enabled because the Democrats have this scarcity mindset, in my opinion. You don't see Republicans picking up and leaving New York and California because it's just so blue. You still see the Republicans showing up in New York City, of all places, trying to make inroads into our business community, whereas the Democrats, you know, writ large as a party, will be like Alabama, Mississippi, you know, it's not worth it. We have to focus where we can win. And our map gets smaller and smaller and smaller. I see it as the project of my lifetime to expand that map, both because I want to be on the winning side of history, but also because you have no idea how terrible it feels to be a Democrat in a place like Alabama and feel totally left behind by your party that is supposed to represent everybody in the country. And so Trump is what woke me up, but Trump is just the part of the iceberg we can see.
Isabel, you say you're there from the beginning of this group. Was Trump the impetus?
I think the panic that ensued in the morning after, we were all mourning, and pictures were up all over my neighborhood with or graphics saying, "Not my president." People were crying with strangers. That was not a long-term productive whatever. But I think that Ava and Michelle have been eloquent on this. And I guess the only thing I would add is that you don't have to go to Alabama. In 2018, we were active in Pennsylvania, and we're back there again. And it is unfortunate that the state party, they were quick to defend and quick to take on the races that they thought they could win. And I think Michelle's use of the word scarcity, it might be why. They feel like they've only got so much and they can't do this. And I really have grown to so admire the grassroots groups besides ours, beyond ours, that, you know, truly are doing work that it seems to me the party has forgotten to do.
So tell me a little bit, each of you perhaps in turn, about the work that you do. So you did work in the 2017 cycle where there's a few states like Virginia. The 2018, we're now into a whole nother electoral cycle. We're almost done with 2020. Right. What have you been up to?
Red to Blue has different groups. So each of us has a different capacity. But 2017, we were in Virginia. We went back there in 2019. 2018, Pennsylvania, and we're back again. We partner with in-state groups. We don't do any work pre-primary. We show up to serve and fill gaps. We have a group called the Creative Support Team. They have an excellent group of people. This cycle, they've worked on 40 campaigns, and they work well beyond just the states that I've named. They've had over 150 volunteers. They've done writing, graphic designs, and web design, and films and editing. And then we have Red to Blue Texting, which has a huge capacity. And Michelle can talk a little bit more about that, but they have responded in many, from a sheriff's office up the ladder. And then the intense work that we do for candidate support is offering specific candidates a full suite of services. So we offer them the texting, the creative services, postcarding, phone banking. We used to canvas, now we do lit drops. We do social media support, audits and analysis and help. We've done research and we share that research.
Yeah, so a few quick things. The texting team, by the end of the cycle, I think will have texted for at least 200 candidates, primarily state-led. And actually, the creative support team and the texting team does get involved pre-primary, each with different ways. The texting team has a committee that tries to figure out which are the right races to engage in. And we had a really smart volunteer in the spirit of Stone Soup who said, there are some places where if we say we're staying out of the primary, we're always going to leave bad status quo actors in place, and designed an entire system for how to engage. And the creative support team says, you know, we're designing websites, for instance, and we're happy to design it for two or three candidates in a primary so that at least whoever wins then has the running start post-primary, and that's how we solve it. The main goal is showing up in the places with the people who are doing the work on the ground and building partnerships and power for the folks where they are. So when I think about that work that we do, we're red to blue. The premise, I don't think this is true anymore, we have so many volunteers, but the premise was we live in blue places and I have a stake in what happens in Pennsylvania. As an American, it's your community, and you can tell me to stay out, but if you create districts that in a 50-50 election send a congressional delegation down to Washington that's 13-5, that is unjust, and I shouldn't turn my back on the way people are being deprived of their voice. And it impacts me because my legislation can't get passed because you've seized too much power. At the same time, we are very humble about the fact that we are not on the ground and we take our instructions from our partners who are on the ground doing the work and know their communities. And so that's the needle we're threading at every turn.
Ava, you have any thoughts on what it is that Red to Blue does?
I would just sort of underscore what Isabel was saying about filling gaps. I think that's a huge part of what we do. So far, my experience has been on some of these smaller races, their infrastructure is just not as strong as it is in other places, just because they're first-time candidates and it's fundraising is hard and it's difficult for these races to get attention. So I think Red to Blue has really decided that they're happy and willing to focus in the places that don't get a lot of focus. So it's these very small, maybe seemingly sometimes insignificant details of this script for a phone bank needs to get edited and we're down to the wire. Like someone from our team will take that, or we don't have someone to run this social media platform. Okay, we'll find someone who can run it. Is there someone who can coordinate volunteer efforts of bringing people in for these lit drops? We don't have the capacity right now on the ground to recruit. Like, yes, we can do that. So there's a lot of shape-shifting inside of these different departments to just sort of say, yeah, we'll do it. We'll figure it out. Not because we're experts, but because we understand the impact of someone just being there to say, we'll help. Because I think the deep, deep exhaustion of constantly pushing a rock up a mountain without enough time, without enough resources, without enough attention, without enough people is like emotionally, physically, and I would say even spiritually, like incredibly damaging and difficult. And so to have a team of people that's like, we see that, we get that, we understand that this is a structural problem. This isn't totally because of, or at all because of your ineptitude as a campaign or because you didn't fundraise or any of those things. Like, it is because there is no way for people to focus everywhere. And so these things get pushed under the rug. But like Michelle was saying, like, these races are so, so, so critical to the way larger decisions across the country are made. So I feel very proud and committed to the like lack of glamour in our organization, that we really are people who are like, oh, let's just like roll up our sleeves and get it done. And like, no, I don't know if this is like in my duties, but now I'm doing it. So I'm going to get it done and I'm going to find someone who can help me. And we're just going to figure it out. And that type of grassroots organizing is very attractive to me. And I feel very strongly about communicating that clearly. I wonder if this is like because of TV shows about politics. I think that there's this idea that you're just like close to the hum of the motor and it's, you know, you get like whisked away in a limousine and you're on your way to a big dinner and then there's a big speech that happens. And like most of it is not that at all. And I think people who are close to political spheres know that, but so many people aren't. And I want to continue to share with people that nothing gets done without somebody saying like, I will hold these details sacred and I will sort through them and I will figure out how to apply them in a meaningful way. Because if you don't raise your hand and do that, like those details will make or break an election. And if you don't hold them tight, they will fall through the cracks because there just isn't enough time in the day.
Yeah, makes sense. Michelle, how would you characterize the sort of people that are volunteering with Red to Blue?
Yeah. So I was about to make a different point that's related that is really coming up for me listening to Ava talk and borderline brings a tear to my eye, which is how much I love the people I'm working alongside. I don't know how I would characterize them. They are the people who aren't going to let everything go down the drain with cynicism. You know, there are people who think Trump's already won the election anyway and it's pointless, or how can they get away with this? Or how are our leaders not, whatever. And I'm listening to Ava talk and we're the, like at Red to Blue, we're the people who don't even say anything. We're going to do the work. We're just going to show up and do the work. And it's so inspiring. Like I'm listening to Ava and I'm like, this is who I want to spend my time with. People who know that things are not okay. And they're just going to keep figuring out how to make it different and better by applying the force of their brain, the force of the bodies, the force of their hearts toward solving this. And, you know, very early after I got involved with Red to Blue, I read this quote, organizing is about creating power out of thin air. And I think about the work we do, and I'll name Ava and the phone banks. We know we need to call voters because information is changing quickly. We've got to get it out to them fast. They need to know what they need to know, keeping people inspired, getting people to show up. And we built a community where there is somehow some joy and camaraderie. And so it's all of it. It's in the doing of the work. It's in the making of things happening. It's just so inspiring to be with the people who can imagine a different future and are willing to spend their time making that different future instead of the people that just whine and do nothing.
Michelle, that borderline brings a tear to my eye. So
I just want to tell a very quick story that in 2018, I approached one of our candidates and she had been approached by everybody in the world. And finally, she got back to me. She said, okay, what can you do for me? And I went through this litany of all these wonderful volunteers who wanted to do this, 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 and this. And she said, okay, how much are you going to charge me? And I said, oh, no, we're free. She couldn't speak because the people who had been contacting her were people who wanted to sell her mailing programs, digital programs, all of these, you know, I'll build you a website. It'll only be $10,000. And she didn't have $2,000. And no, we're free. We're here.
It does make me feel like democracy is alive and well when you listen to the people who are doing the work of it. It's just so important in this time. What would you guys say is the impact that you've had as an organization on the outside world?
I mean, certainly we've helped people win races, but that feels like a very small statement. So you'll hear me talk about Alabama a lot. I got very involved in 2017 when Doug Jones and Roy Moore were in that election and ended up meeting the House Minority Leader and went on to do a wild, zany set of initiatives. Because again, once you show up once, you keep showing up. And I think the impact of expressing interest in Alabama, win or lose, all these people from New York building whatever, 30 or 40 websites, texting for 30 or 40 candidates, you know, in the spirit of what do you need? How can we help? He was like, can you help me recruit candidates to run for office? And we built this giant grassroots operation. So that's one thing. But then I also think about Virginia in 2017. I mean, I will go down as saying election night 2017 was the best night of my life. They were saying in 2017, if we won 5 to 7 races, it would be a good night. We'd have exceeded expectations. I went down and canvassed in Virginia Beach on the Monday. And then on Tuesday, election day, I was handing out campaign lit in the Richmond area and was driving home as the results were coming in. And I don't know if you've driven on the New Jersey Turnpike, but there are these rest areas. And my phone was blowing up and everybody was calling me. And every rest area, I pulled over to look at stats. And every rest area, another one of our long shot candidates that had no chance had won, plus adjacent long shot candidates. I mean, Isabel talks about 6 out of 10, but that was our first massive year for texting. We texted for roughly 40 candidates and, you know, tons of them won too. And even the ones that lost far exceeded expectations. And like, was that our impact or were we part of a movement? Both and, I don't know. How can we possibly isolate our electoral impact when there are so many interventions? And I know everyone tries and there's tons of statistic analysis and I'm really excited that's there. But that combination of being part of the movement, so I get to be part of the party, but part of the solution, I don't ever really think about it more specifically than that, because this is how I want to be spending my time.
I love you both. And I just want to say that for me, it's been such a wonderful community. And you've pulled me out of the chasm of despair again and again. I believe that we have offered that community to many people, and we've grown because of that community. We lead with humility. We lead with caring. It's been more than I could have imagined.
I mean, it feels to me from talking to people in grassroots groups and activists for a couple years now that it's therapeutic. It is empowering to get involved in this way. And it's a remedy for some of the sort of political pain that we've experienced. That seems what I'm hearing from you folks.
Nathaniel, I want to say yes, and I want to push back that it is in no way indulgent. So that the reason that it saves my sanity is not because I've got somebody saying, oh, Isabel this, or oh, we did that, but rather because of the work. And I always want to bring it back to the work.
I was about to say the same thing. There is something that feels wrong characterizing it as therapeutic. Like, that's nice if that's a side benefit, but I just want to show up.
I agree with you, Nathaniel. Like, I see it, I think, how maybe you do that. That's not the reason that I'm involved, but I do think that our personal health and well-being makes good government. Like, if we take good care of ourselves and our neighbors, we will have a better government. So for me, like, there is a place that the level of rage and terror that I feel like does actually need to go somewhere to like remain in some level of balance. And I don't think I'm living like the most balanced life right now because there's just too much to do. But I do think that in activist spaces and political spaces and grassroots spaces, like I do think that there is something, there's a paradigm shift that occurs where you're outside of decision making and then all of a sudden you're inside decision making. And I think that is also what can happen in therapy, where you're sort of like, oh, I am the master of my own destiny. There are patterns and ways of being and habits that can shift if I attend to them. And I think on a structural level, that's true too. Like there are patterns and ways of being inside our government that if I participate and show up and recognize that I can apply pressure and I have power, then there is this paradigm shift that happens and we start looking like a much better democracy. So I do feel like the internal shift and the benefits of participating and then the way that those like personal benefits ripple out into organizational or structural or government benefits do feel really linked to me.
I've had numerous people come to me and say, I want to get involved. I don't know how. I've, you know, provided lists of different organizations that I think are good to look at. I don't always know whether that went anywhere. Why would someone want to pick Red to Blue as a place compared to other organizations? Why ought Red to Blue exist in a polity where there's numerous organizations? What's special about you guys?
I could probably speak to what we do and how we work and how we welcome people. On a real retail level, I would give you an example of a phone bank, which, as you know, is the least sexy activity, where an 83-year-old woman showed up and the technology is an auto dialer, and Ava stayed with that woman for the whole time. And this woman, we have a quote from her that her blood pressure skyrocketed and Ava stayed with her. She succeeded in making maybe 3 calls and she said, I'm coming back. And she has shown up. She is the model. And that it's on such a retail level. It's so personal. If you reach out to us and you work with us, we will try so hard to find a place where you can do your work.
If you do the work, you're asked to do more work. And that makes you feel like the first work you did was so good and so useful and so helpful. We really recruit people who love doing good work well. And we just keep engaging them through the more work. And I also want to say, and I hope I don't offend my colleagues by saying it, there are groups like ours all over the country. I mean, you know, my big joke about 2018 and we flipped the Congress and we did all these great things. People are like, what are you happiest about? What's the biggest win? And I said, Kansas. I had no idea Kansas was in play. There was just a whole group of people. I imagine them wonderful, just like us, getting up every day, emailing their friends, and taking Kansas back. And I never had to think about it. And that's what it means to be part of a movement that's going to change this country, that's culture change happening everywhere. And yes, we absolutely make the best of the stone soup. But if we're the only stone soup or the best stone soup or whatever, it's not enough. It is so energizing to imagine that we are part of a culture that is big and broad and kind and hardworking, that is replicating this kind of mindset everywhere.
Second that. We could name many, many grassroots groups that we've partnered with, and they're doing what we're doing.
I've been in a similar position of receiving those emails of people sort of vaguely being like, you seem really involved. Like, what should I do? What should I do? And I've sent them lists and you've sent them lists. And how do you try to be concise? How do you give enough information? How do you not overwhelm people? How do you remind people it's an emergency? You know, like all of these details. And I do feel like with Red to Blue that, you know, if somebody chose to volunteer for another organization doing similar work, I would be delighted. You know, I want people to be involved, but I think it can feel incredibly overwhelming. And I think that in some ways, this is what Isabel and Michelle are saying, but our willingness and desire to sort of say, like, we are happy you are here and we are willing to do what's needed to make sure you feel invested, seen, involved. And that can require extra steps and more follow-up, just extra. I recognize that in certain spaces, scaling up is the biggest goal or one of the biggest goals. And I think for us, retaining people who can grow and then gather people at a pace where everybody feels like they can fully show up is as critical as scaling. And so I do think we're offering a specific kind of, for lack of a better term, like user experience. And that is part of what we bring to the table, that people can get into our organization and find ways of meaningfully engaging, and that it matters that they showed up, and that we don't want to use people just as pawns to get work done, even though, you know, we have a lot of work to get done and welcome everyone to come do it. I don't feel in competition with like our sister organizations, but I feel like every organization has its own focus, and people who want our focus seem to find us.
I mean, one of the things that I found really fascinating about this time is how much people have leaned towards creating their own organizations or joining new organizations, like the Indivisibles and things like the Swing Lefts that have chapters and just came up, you know, around the same time you did, rather than take part necessarily directly in the Democratic Party, which already had a structure, which had precinct level, county level, state level organizations, and is more wired into American politics. But people seem to often, not all, but want to take charge of their destiny in a different way in how they enter politics.
I'd say that we need to be adjacent to the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party did not feel that it listened to us. The Democratic Party feels very still male dominated. Watching their advice to our candidates, I scratch my head, and I know that I am far from expert, but this is not good advice. The party has been affected by grassroots groups and is more responsive this cycle than it certainly has been in the past. But it was the Democratic clubs in our area. It didn't feel like me. And I think it's also women. I mean, we have wonderful men working in Red to Blue. But when I look around at the leadership of many of these grassroots groups, it's women who establish a culture that other women are comfortable in as well.
What have you guys learned about, or you gals learned about, American politics in this time that you've been so intensely participating?
I think that long silence is probably about us feeling so deep in the trenches. It's at least for me, is a little challenging to step back and think about what I've learned, because I feel like I'm inside the learning curve. So I have so little perspective to offer. This maybe seems so insignificant in relationship to the question, but I do, for me, feel like remembering or relearning how change happens and what it actually looks like. And to me, what it actually looks like is getting inside the details, like deep, deep, deep inside every detail of communication structures, website design, recruiting tactics, messaging on scripts, messaging on text, like all of these little things that filter up to execute a overarching strategy, that if you can get inside and master those details, you can change things and you can win races, as we saw in Virginia. I don't feel like I actually have enough distance to think about what else I've learned. But I will say one other thing. I guess I'm maybe hesitant because it's like a little bit embarrassing, but I think I've actually learned about state government. Like before being very involved in Red to Blue, I don't think I understood exactly what we were talking about when we were talking about a census year and what the census means for distribution of funds and the direct effect on somebody's property taxes when state lines are gerrymandered X, Y, Z way, why that blocks certain candidates from getting elected. And if they can't get elected, they can't, you know, vote for X, Y, and Z policy that would reduce your taxes. That it's so easy to forget the decisions that state level candidates are responsible for and the huge impact that it has on our lives. So I do still feel, even in 2020, that there's this tendency to want to go big or go home. There's this tendency to want to work on the high profile races, the big races, the presidential races. And that work needs to get done too. There's no problem with that. But I think it's very easy to forget that the things that affect our day-to-day are at the state level and at the city level and even further down at the local level. And that's been a really big learning curve for me about understanding what that looks like in real time.
Michelle, for you, what would you say?
You know, I'm still trying to figure out what I'm learning about politics, to be totally honest. I'll tell you this. After the election, there was this really terrible, snarky SNL bit about the bubble. I don't know, has everyone here seen it? And the bubble was Brooklyn, and it was about a glass dome. I mean, honestly, I have a friend that writes for SNL, and my friend wrote that. And I was like, I was so mad. I was like, why do you have to insult? It's not my bubble. It's my community. And I live in this community and I picked this community and I love this community. And why be snarky about it? But I really felt like I must not, if we have Trump as a president, I don't get it. And the way I understand the world is by meeting people and being of use to them, of loving them with my whole heart. And so for me, this has been an exercise in making friends in Alabama, Virginia, Pennsylvania, but also New Jersey and Georgia and South Carolina and Massachusetts, all of that kind of thing. And so I'm just learning about what it means to live in all the places in this country and really connect in support of one another. And politics is some of that, but also it really is, you know, the expression of building power, of helping to elevate my friends' voices, trying to understand where power lives and lies and who collects it and what for. I haven't sorted it out. I feel like I'm very much in the middle of the story. I am so in the middle of the story. There are no lessons right now. I have no clue where the story is going. The one thing I have learned is that there are so many of us with overlapping interests and needs. And if we talk to each other, we can do things differently.
Isabel?
I feel very much like Ava and very much like Michelle, that because we are so deep into the work, I have not pulled my head up to look around. I am hoping that when we do pull our heads up, we say, okay, so we've done this, now what? And we have the ability then to say, what have we learned? Where are we going? What did we do well? Where do we want to work next? I'm not able to come up with any big learning so much as looking forward to a time when I will have the space to reflect. At the moment, I have a 10 o'clock call with a candidate.
Okay. Well,
oh, I love you, Isabel.
Do you mind if I ask a couple more questions?
Go right ahead.
I mean, one of the things that I think about is that for all of the wonderful work we have going on the progressive side, and that bubble, if you want to call it that, extends out to the progressive people in every state, that the other side also has earnest, authentic people in many cases organizing to make change as they see it that are diametrically opposed to us and yet are neighbors in one fashion or another. And I wonder how you view, you know, the best of the people on the other side.
I feel like we live in parallel universes. I feel that we don't read the same materials. We don't listen to the same media. It is parallel universes. And I have people in my own family where this has happened.
Michelle?
I don't know. It's hard for me right now. Clearly, there's an information bubble. Fox News has done its number, or Fox News and the adjacent media ecosystem. But honestly, if you haven't joined, you know, the Never Trumpers or the Lincoln Project or the, you know, I left Trump. I mean, there's so many Republicans leaving Trump. You're not my concern right now. I'm here about leaving no votes on the table. I'm here for the persuadables. I'm here for turning out the folks who think that our systems don't serve them well. I am so excited. I mean, I think about when the ACA was about to be turned over and I had to call all these people in Republican states to get them to, you know, lobby their senators. And I was so powerless. I'm like, a Democratic controlled Senate, let the Republicans call me and I'll go camp out. Schumer lives a mile from my house and I look forward to camping out in front of his house. That's what concerns me. That's what motivates me. That's what animates me. I just, it's not for me to wonder how people I absolutely cannot understand will tolerate this much oppression.
Ava?
I think on the good days, I can really understand that based on the information that people have and the life experience they've had and the makeup of their communities, that they are working towards a goal that is reasonable to them. They are working with passion towards something that they believe is going to better them and protect them and keep their families and communities safe. And I think that part of the issue that we're seeing is that there are a lot of people that are dehumanizing swaths of populations, of huge groups of people are just being taken down by people on the other side. And I don't want to fall prey to that same mentality. Like, I don't want to fall prey to saying, to dehumanizing the other side. But to Michelle's point, I just can't spend a lot of time there. So there are people who will never vote for our candidates. And as much community building as we're doing, like, because of where we are, we also have to win. And we won't do it by focusing there. So the amount of energy and time that I spend trying to unpack or think about what kind of organizing is going on in those spaces beyond, like, what is going to affect our strategy, I try to keep at a minimum. And I feel extremely challenged to maintain that. I just see the level of damage that has been done and the way that people and communities are protected from seeing that and recognizing that, and the way that they've kind of built themselves into a box that eventually will break, but I don't know when, I don't exactly know how. So I try to be as generous as I can and to also spend time where I'm going to have impact.
That makes sense. I mean, I think it's really hard when sort of there's, I don't know, great evil going on at the top and people don't see it or are aligned with it for different reasons. It's highly complicated. Is there a question I failed to ask that you guys would like to answer?
Maybe this is more of a plug than a question, but this is sort of to what you asked earlier. If you are a person who doesn't know exactly how to get involved, please come and join us. Please, you know, show up. We welcome you. We want to see you around our virtual hallways. We want to get you plugged in ways that are going to feel meaningful. We want you to feel like you can leave it all on the table before November.
I want to echo that. I mean, part of the reason, you know, and I say I am thrilled that there are groups all over the country doing this kind of work, but also I know it can be alienating to put your name on a mailing list and not know what happens next. And if you find your way to us, we want to wrap you in our community and have you join our team, our, you know, virtual party, our community, as we bring everything home in these final weeks of the election. And then, of course, the election may not be over when the election is over. So whatever comes next will be part of that too. But we really do hope to expand this community, both because we want to be effective and impactful for the candidates we support, but because also I think building this community is a public good in its own right.
Isabel?
Yes. We really do welcome people. We have real work. We're recruiting now for seeing if we can help Pennsylvania staff greeters at all these precincts. We, you know, that's hundreds of people needed. We're not sure who's going to be showing up this year. We have thousands and thousands of pieces of literature that we are doing safe lit drops again. So many things that people can do. And calling, we're making phone calls. It is not that shiny thing. It is not sexy. It is so important. Pennsylvania was lost by fewer than 5 votes per precinct. That adds up to, you know, whatever 44,000 and change votes that we lost PA, and those are 20 electoral votes. So we have plenty of love for you and plenty of work. Please join us.
And I just want to say, you say it's not sexy, but people come and they come back, and our candidates love us, and there's so much to be done. I don't know that it's not sexy. I just want to throw that down on the table. I really feel like we have like this, like humility is baked into our bones. So we have this way of knocking the stuff we do. And maybe it's because I'm looking on and phone banks are your thing. But, you know, I think about our in-state partner, Turn PA Blue, and they're like, oh, the way Isabel and Ava do phone banks is absolutely the way we're going to do them statewide. And now they've set the model. I mean, I love them. It's not my work, so I can boast about it. If it were my work, I'm sure I would say, oh, it's not sexy and it's not this and it's not that. But since it's theirs, what they're doing is special. And I sort of need everyone to know that because I want to get the reflected glow of just being near them.
There was one phone bank where one of our volunteers called somebody who said that she was on her honeymoon, and the woman, our volunteer, said, get off the phone with me. You're on your honeymoon. That was sexy.
Well, it's been really an honor. Anything else you want to say?
Thank you for being interested in us. This is fun. It's nice.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's just so nice to talk to you.
And you have a wonderful voice.
Thank you.
You asked that question, I feel like I'm really with somebody who's so warm and good and interested. You ask very good questions. Thank you.
Well, it's very inspiring for me to hear. That was Isabel, Michelle, and Ava at Red to Blue. They're at redtoblue.org. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at greatbattlefield.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.